the push for higher minimum wage is causing divisions among Democrats.
The key here is Democrats want to go out and campaign in 2020 that they're on the side of American workers, and raising the minimum wage is a key part of that platform. But if they can't even show that they can pass it out of a House that they control, that weakens that message quite a bit.
Plus, the U.S. and China failed to reach a trade deal this week, and Uber has a bumpy public debut. This is What's News from The Wall Street Journal. I'm Anne-Marie Fertoli in New York. Before we get to our story on minimum wage, here are some other top stories we're following. Uber made its much-anticipated public debut on Friday, but it was a disappointing one as shares of the company fell 7.6% on the first day of trading. The company's stock closed at $41.57 a share on the New York Stock Exchange, giving Uber a valuation of about $76 billion. Uber's debut comes after rival Lyft's IPO in March. That company has seen shares slide since its debut. The companies are being watched closely in what's expected to be a big year for tech IPOs. The U.S. and China failed to reach a trade agreement on Friday after the U.S. raised tariffs on $200 billion worth of Chinese goods at midnight. The Wall Street Journal's Josh Zumbrun says consumers may begin to feel an impact with the latest increases.
These products did have a 10% tariff previously, but that's small enough that a lot of companies had kind of absorbed the cost. They hadn't passed it on to consumers. And so you're looking at goods like furniture and handbags and all sorts of grocery food stuffs and all these sorts of things that come in from China that people do purchase on a regular basis, things that are in the stores at Target and Walmart and Costco. And those goods are now going to see that high tariff. And so once that tariff really starts to bite, you would probably expect to see some of the prices of those types of items start to rise at the stores.
The future of talks between the U.S. and China remained uncertain as of Friday afternoon. China has previously vowed to retaliate against the U.S. for raising tariffs from 10% to 25%. Meanwhile, the Trump administration announced plans to provide aid to farmers who have been suffering amid the trade battle. Retaliatory tariffs from China and the European Union have led to lower crop prices. China has also reduced purchases of U.S. farm exports, including soybeans, which are trading near a 10-year low, and pork. The U.S. Department of Agriculture says it is working on a new aid program for U.S. farmers. The House of Representatives has approved a disaster aid package worth more than $19 billion for regions including Puerto Rico that have been hard hit by natural disasters. The House approved the bill in a vote of 257 in favor to 150 against. Lawmakers disagreed over how much aid should go to Puerto Rico. President Trump and Republicans have expressed concerns over how Puerto Rico has spent previous funding. Local officials have been calling for more aid and deny that previous federal funding was misspent. Negotiations on disaster aid continue in the Senate. Regional differences across the United States are impacting Democrats' fight for $15 an hour minimum wage. Joining me now from Washington with more details is Wall Street Journal reporter Eric Morath. Eric, this has long been a push from Democrats, but you found the issue is actually now dividing members within the party because of the differences they face in their home states.
Yeah, so Democrats have long supported raising the minimum wage, which has been at $7.25 an hour since 2009. This is something that President Barack Obama called for in three different State of the Union addresses. But what's different now is what level should that wage be? There's quite a bit of support, including from almost every Democratic presidential candidate, around the idea of a $15 minimum wage. And that's a higher number than many Democrats, including those in the House, are comfortable with. And that's especially true in places like Alabama, where the median wage is much lower than, say, New York City, and they're concerned that a $15 minimum would result in layoffs in their state.
So there are now competing proposals to raise the minimum wage, and both would be gradual. Tell us about how these proposals differ and how they account for changes state to state.
Sure. So the proposal that has the backing of the majority of Democrats, including the leadership, would raise the minimum wage to $15 an hour by the early part of next decade. And it's pretty similar to previous minimum wage increases, a national level that set. States have the ability to go higher, but a national floor is set. What Representative Sewell from Alabama and others have proposed is a tiered system, a system that would look at the cost of living in each metro area and set the minimum wage accordingly. That would allow the rate to rise faster in more expensive cities, but a place like the Deep South, it wouldn't maybe reach $15 an hour until the 2030s, and that's only dependent on how inflation picks up.
So as Democrats are struggling to unite behind a single proposal, even if they do, this is a measure that would face challenges in the Senate, which is controlled by Republicans.
Yeah, that's right. There hasn't been any signal that the Senate is willing to take up a minimum wage increase. The president has at times said that he thought even the current minimum wage is too high when he was running for office. Later, he ended up saying maybe a $10 minimum wage would be appropriate. But here, the key here is Democrats want to go out and campaign in the 2020 that they are on the side of American workers. And raising the minimum wage is a key part of that platform. But if they can't even show that they can pass it out of a house that they control, you know, that weakens that message quite a bit.
Eric, in your piece, you talk about how this debate among lawmakers right now is mirroring a debate that economists have long had over minimum wage. How so?
Yeah, well, you know, just kind of back to economics 101, if you raise the price of something, in this case, the cost of labor, the demand for that product typically goes down. So that's just basically if you make workers artificially be paid more, then the demand for labor will fall and businesses will look to automate, they'll look to offshore. There's all sorts of different levers they can pool. And that's kind of the classical economic theory. But there's been a lot of studies into the state minimum wage increases where the classic one was New Jersey raised the minimum wage, Pennsylvania didn't. They're bordering states. What happened? And the outcome was that, you know, there wasn't massive job loss among fast food workers in New Jersey. It kind of mirrored the trends of the rest of the region. The thing that we don't know is $15 an hour would be an unprecedentedly high minimum wage in the United States. Even when adjusting for inflation, the rate has never been that high. So we don't know if that's above the tipping point where job losses would be created, or if it's something where it would benefit people by lifting them out of poverty, reducing income inequality without causing layoffs.
You mentioned 2020, and we are already looking ahead to election season and what some of the presidential candidates have said already. How do you think this is likely to continue playing out this election season?
I think the minimum wage will have a lot of support as an election issue, especially at the national level, because it's something that sounds great and doesn't cost the government anything. The government doesn't have to raise taxes to increase the minimum wage like they do if they want to expand health care coverage, per se. So it's a popular issue from a national perspective. I think what we're seeing here in the debate is once you get down to the state and local level, there are some concerns about if, you know, San Francisco should have the same wages as like Frisco, Texas.
That's Wall Street Journal reporter Eric Morath joining us from Washington with more on the debate over minimum wage. Eric, thanks so much.
Sure. Happy to join you.
Now on to some more headlines from The Wall Street Journal. A mutual fund in Boston says it's returning more than $90 million to the Sackler family, which owns Purdue Pharma, the maker of OxyContin. The family's money made up the majority of Balter Capital Management's $150 million fund. Its founder, Brad Balter, said the Sackler's long-term commitment to the fund was uncertain, as Purdue Pharma faces more than 2,000 lawsuits from cities, counties, and states for the company's alleged role in the opioid crisis. The Wall Street Journal has reported that Purdue is considering filing for bankruptcy. Last month, the company reached a $270 million settlement with Oklahoma's Attorney General. Lingerie retailer Victoria's Secret will no longer broadcast its annual fashion show on network television following a decline in viewership and increased criticism. The show had aired on CBS and ABC for nearly two decades. In an internal memo sent to employees, the CEO of the retailer's parent company, L Brands, said it was rethinking the show and working on developing new content. And finally, Washington, D.C. has launched a new project called the D.C. Cat Count in the hopes of assessing a hotly debated topic, the ecological impact of free-roaming cats. The first goal of the $1.5 million project is to find out just how many cats are in the city. The Wall Street Journal's Joe Craven-McGinty explains how it works.
So the researchers are dividing Washington, D.C. into sampling blocks that measure 800 by 800 meters. They place 20 cameras within each block, and essentially they just wait for cats to wander by. The cameras are activated by a motion sensor, and they'll collect data every 24 hours for 1 month. And they take the information, identify individual cats by their fur pattern. The first day, to give a simplified example, they see how many cats they captured on camera. The second day, they'll do the same thing. Some cats captured on the first day will be recaptured by the photographs. And the proportion that is recaptured gives them an indication of what portion of the entire population was captured on the first day. The reason for doing this is that to determine what the ecological impact of cats is on the environment, you first need to know how many cats are out there. Once you know that, you can investigate, for example, how many birds they might be killing, how many small mammals, and so forth.
In 2013, scientists estimated outdoor cats kill up to 4 billion birds and more than 22 billion mammals each year in the United States. The findings, which were published in Nature Communications, received significant backlash from advocates, and it's still a much debated topic. So we'd like to know what you think. Should cats be allowed to roam freely? Tell us why or why not by tweeting us at WSJ Podcast or emailing whatsnews@wsj.com. That's What's News for this Friday afternoon. I'm Anne-Marie Fertoli for The Wall Street Journal. Have a great weekend, and thanks for listening.